We build on foundations we did not lay. We warm ourselves at fires we did not light. We sit in the shade of trees we did not plant, and we drink from wells we did not dig. Each of us is blessed with gifts from those who were here before us and have gifts to pass on to others in our turn. And so I welcome you to this meeting of Kensington Unitarians on this early autumn Sunday morning. We're gathering here for our annual Harvest Festival, a celebration of the world in which we live and all that nature gifts to us at this time of year. And today we'll be holding a Harvest Bring and Share lunch. Do feel free to stay, even if you didn't manage to bring any food, there's always enough for everyone. And let's start by reminding ourselves that people are welcome here, whatever we've brought with us this day. Our troubles, our bubbling enthusiasms, our questions and doubts, our certainties, our worries, our possibilities. Let it all be here with us now. And who knows what new perspective might emerge as we spend time together in song and silence with stories and ideas to spark off our own. So let's take a moment, one of those conscious breaths, to know that we are fully here now. And maybe part of that breathing in and out can be a breath of acceptance of all. Acceptance of all that we are, acceptance of the changing moods of summer weather, accepting the complex world in which we live. And our chalice reminds us of connections with progressive religious communities the world over. As frozen earth holds the determined seed, this sacred space holds our weariness, our worry, our laughter, and our celebration. Let us bring seed and soul into the light of thought, the warmth of community, and the hope of love. Let us be together, feel together, love together. Let's worship. And a really tiny story now to just help emphasise that idea that we are in this thing called life together. You'll have heard it perhaps before, the story of two monks arriving in a closed off village that had seen so many hard times with famine, with floods, with war. And lacking in trust, those villagers were no longer kindly to strangers. It's as though unhappiness and difficulty has hardened everybody's hearts. And you know what? When those strangers came into town, everybody just retreated inside their own homes and locked their doors. There's not a bite to eat in this whole region, they were told. We're weak, our children are starving, better keep moving on, go away. But the monks decided to stay and to make stone soup to share with everyone. And so they pull out a big iron cauldron out of their pack, they fill it with water, they light a fire underneath it. And then with great ceremony, one of the travelling monks brings an ordinary looking stone from a silken bag and drops it into the water. By now, hearing the rumour of food, most of the villagers were peeking out of the windows or starting to come out of their doors. And as the stranger sniffed the soup and licked their lips in anticipation, hunger began to overcome the fear of those people. Mmm, the monk said to himself rather loudly, I do like a tasty stone soup. Of course, stone soup with cabbage, now that's hard to beat. And do you know what? A villager approached hesitantly, holding a small cabbage, just like the one that we've got here today. And they added the cabbage to the pot. And then some other people in the village shared a little that they've got. Some salt and pepper, that always comes in handy. A few carrots, onions, mushrooms. And do you know what? Before long, they've got a really tasty soup and the whole community sits down to eat together. And it's said that the village elder begged those monks to sell him the magic stone. But do you know, he refused to sell it and he travelled on the next day. But as the monks left town, they came across a group of village children standing near the road. And do you know what? He gave that silken bag with the stone to the youngest child, and he whispered to them all, "It wasn't the stone. It was you villagers that performed the magic." And that is the story of the stone soup. And I think our children's group are heading downstairs. Anyone young at heart may join them if you'd like to. But those of us who stay, I invite you now to centre inwards for a short time of prayer and reflection. For our world of abundance, I call on the Spirit of Life and Love to be with us now, to bless all we say and do together this day. Let's give thanks for the world of abundance in which we live. And I invite you in your hearts to find a silent expression of gratitude for whatever you feel glad to have received in life, be these great gifts or small mercies. To give thanks is a prayer from our heart. And some of us may well be all too aware of what we lack in life, for no life can have everything it wants or needs. Some of us have unfulfilled yearnings that point us in the directions of our hopes and dreams, or that require us to accept that we cannot always have what we want. We know the great injustices of our world, economic inequalities, unequal distribution of world resources, a shameful lack of basic provision for far too many of the world's people. So may we be the people who work to right such wrongs. May we dedicate ourselves to a fairer sharing of all that is, and to every person's basic right to clean water, adequate food, and fresh air. A safe place to live, and a way to be who we truly are. A place of freedom and encouragement for all. And in a few moments of shared silence now, let's each silently voice our own thoughts and prayers for those who we know to be in need this day. And may the words of our hearts be matched by the actions of our hands, working in this world of abundance, that all might be fed and watered this day and all days. Amen.
Poet May Sarton was a Unitarian Universalist. She wrote this poem, The House of Gathering, towards the end of her life. And she speaks of our growing understanding as we age that there is always more work to be done in the world, and that sometimes it is the smallest of acts, even the sowing of a seed, that may make the difference. If old age is a house of gathering, then the hands are full. There are old trees to prune, and young plants to plant. There are seeds to be sown. Not less of anything, but more of everything to care for, to maintain, to keep sorted out, a profusion of people to answer, to respond to. But we have been ripening to a greater ease, learning to accept that all hungers cannot be fed, that saving the world may be a matter of sowing a seed, not overturning a tyrant, that we can do what we can. The moment of vision The seizure still makes its relentless demands. Work, love, be silent, speak.
I'm going to ask our choir to get themselves ready now for singing our beautiful tune, Balm in Gilead. I'm going to introduce that with just a few words from a poem, which when I read it, it just totally touched my heart, this piece. Later that night, I held an atlas in my lap, and I ran my fingers across the whole world and whispered, "Where does it hurt?" It answered, "Everywhere, everywhere, everywhere."
This reading is going to lead into a shared time of silence and stillness together. So I invite you to get comfortable in your chair, maybe set aside whatever you're holding on to, literally and figuratively. Maybe close your eyes or soften your gaze. After our reading, there'll be a good few minutes for a nice, long, silent meditation, and that will be ended with a chime from our bell. This is In an Unsettled World by Bruce T. Marshall. In an unsettled world, we seek for a few moments to turn away from the noise and confusion of our lives. We seek to enter a stillness that resides in the depths of each of us, a stillness that is at the center of all that exists. For a few moments, let us seek quiet. Not the quiet that is the absence of noise, for there is always noise. Rather, it is like the stillness of a friend listening, the noontime silence of sunlight on a lake, the silence of a new idea, a thought that makes the world pause. The quiet of growing plants, the quiet of a child sleeping, the silence that brings rest, the silence that brings renewal, the silence from which love and hope emerge. Let us pause for a few moments to listen for the stillness that rests beneath the confusion and complexities of our lives.
People in my congregation know that when the order of service says some thoughts on ... it means I've really got nothing to say at all. And indeed, that is the case today. What can I tell you about life that you don't know already? Nothing. We all know how it is. We know that it's worth putting effort into what we care about in life, and that if we put energy into our projects, there's often a positive payback. If you plant a seed, real or symbolic, then you might well get to harvest a crop or have a beautiful flower to enjoy. And we also know the other side of the coin, that with the best will in the world, our schemes may sometimes come to nothing, that an ill wind will blow, a flood may come, someone may tread all over your tender seedlings, and through no fault of your own, no crop, no flowers, no successful end to your plans, your hopes and dreams come to naught. And we also know, don't we, that we can't allow fear of an unknown horrible future stop us from doing the bit we can do. And the older I get, the more I find myself agreeing with poet Mae Sarton when she writes about learning to accept that all hungers cannot be fed, that saving the world may be a matter of sowing a seed, not overturning a tyrant. The list of tyrants I would like to overthrow is growing ever longer at the moment, but maybe all we can do is sow that seed. So let's not ever be stopped from doing the bit we can do to right wrongs, to overcome injustice, and to reach out a hand of human solidarity to those who have had the dice of life well and truly stacked against them. And because of this message, we asked Jennifer Blair, human rights lawyer, to come and tell us about a particular need that she's been made aware of amongst the children of refugees here in Britain. Thank you. Oh, we're then going to have a charity collection for this particular cause. Thank you, and I'm going to get my money.
Hello, my name is Jennifer. I was coming to this church for quite a long time, so I'm not just kind of coming from out of the blue. I work with quite a few different migrants charities, and their focus is more on sort of communities, so people working together with people in their local area. And Roy, who's part of the congregation here, is one of the mentors of one of those charities. So there's lots of different ways, not just handing over money today, that you could help the sorts of people I'm working with. I'll start with maybe a few examples of the kind of things people are facing just here in London. So one example, an Afghan boy who comes here on his own, arrives unaccompanied, doesn't speak any English, taken into foster care, and a lot of Afghan cases are refused, but he's granted asylum after a long battle. But the Home Office has changed its policy now, so that before they'll give you indefinite leave to remain, they review whether you still need asylum. So he gets 5 years leave, he turns 18, he applies for settlement, he's going to go to university, he now speaks English, He's a martial artist. He's got a British girlfriend. He's just moved out of social services accommodation. He's got his own little flat. He's learning to cook. He doesn't cook very well. And they say, right, you don't need leave to remain anymore. You can go back to Afghanistan. You're 18 now. He's not from Kabul. They're saying he could go back to Kabul. You may have seen all the recent attacks that have been taking place there. He's terrified, doesn't know where his family are. And that's kind of one of that situation, that there's nobody really in his corner, because although he's still getting some advice from social services, they don't want to spend a lot of money on him because they've had massive budgetary cuts, and they also don't want to seem unfair when they're not giving that sort of money to another care leaver. So people like him are kind of on their own. Another kind of situation we see a lot, where a family maybe haven't got leave to remain but have got maybe a case pending with the Home Office, have got an appeal pending, and there may be no support they can get from anyone. So a family we were working with recently, a charity in North London who the collection's for today, the dad had an application in that gave him a right to work. So he'd got a job with the trains or something, I can't remember what it was, but that had been refused and he just hadn't told them because he had three children. And he was like, well, what else am I going to do? And then the train company reviewed everybody's right to work and they suspended him, and he didn't want to lie to them, so he just didn't go to the appointment. So then he has no income coming in. It's winter, so they've got no... But by the time he comes to us, they've got no electricity, they've got no heating, they're being evicted, and this man with three children, and it's coming up to the school Christmas holidays, and he's like, well, the children are going to be really ill because at the moment we just leave them in school all day because at least there's heating there. And then they come back from school, they go and sort of sit in a McDonald's or something for 3 hours before they go home, and then they just try and tuck them in several bodies to a bed to sleep. But then that what's going to happen when they're made homeless, and what's you'll say to people like that, oh, absent-mindedly, what are you doing over Christmas? And they'll be like, well, nothing. Like, oh yeah, that's true, you wouldn't be, would you? And so for the children, they're going to school as if normal, but they don't have the right uniforms, they can't sometimes travel, they used to have swimming lessons, they don't have those anymore. It's just really like the sort of thing when you compare them with, if you've got your own kids at school or something like that, that you're like, well, all your neighbours' kids, and these are people who might be living on your street. So there are various things that family can do to kind of get them back into a system. Because they've got children, you can kind of try and get social services to accommodate them, to provide some basic money for food. But then after a very long battle, where a legal challenge was threatened, that family, social services, housed them, and then they gave them £60 a week, family of five in London. And they're just refusing to go above that £60 a week. The boy's got into a school that's too far away, he can't get there, he took an entrance exam for this school, and he was like, I'm going to this brilliant school, and then his parents have to be like, yeah, I'm sorry you spent a year working to get into this school, you can't go now. And the thing that's ridiculous is his little brother's going to get British citizenship next year because he's entitled to it, and the family will all be granted leave to remain, but they'll have spent 10 years living in child poverty because there's no system to allow that. You know, it's guaranteed they're going to be here. His future's in this country. He was born here. Another category of people, so it's not just children, sort of very young adults. So on Monday I went to court for a young man he's a young gay man from a Caribbean country that's not very nice to young gay men. And he had a very difficult upbringing when his family found out he was gay. He came here and he had a civil partnership. That broke down and he had leave as a partner. So when he applied for further leave to remain, they said no. So he was meant to go to court for his appeal and say, I can't go back to this country because it's inconceivably bad what would happen to him there. But he was made homeless the night before. And couldn't get to court because all his Oyster card was locked in this other person's house. He'd been sleeping on their sofa. So I was just going to go to court and try and help him get the case adjourned anyway because he didn't have a lawyer, he couldn't pay. We were trying to get him a legal aid lawyer. And then he wasn't even at court. So I thought someone else was going to go. And what happened, I was on my way back from Centre Parks and I was told I needed to go to court. The client wasn't going to be there. So I was in silver shoes and a party dress, being like, judge, you can't do it. But that's one where it was adjourned. But again, that's just me just doing that's not a system that's meant to be, you know, there is a system that's meant to be in place, but it doesn't help people in his position. So what the charities are doing, they used to be kind of, oh, let's just kind of anti-racism organisations, let's bring people together, let's have like lunch together, and people from the community can meet people from migrant communities. But as the hostile environments got worse, as legal aid has been cut, they're now just like advice surgeries mostly, because there's just a desperate need for advice. So people who often have really, so I saw someone the other day who's been told to claim asylum, claimed asylum, and I was like, but you're a permanently resident, you're a family member of an EU national. And she was like, oh, but I've seen three solicitors and no one told me that. And I was just like, how does this, because there's no funding for the European law part of her case, so no one had explored it with her. But she's already lawfully present, she doesn't need asylum. So it's like there's just a big gap in the system. So the things you can do, one, read about all of this stuff. You know, maybe seen the Panorama documentary on immigration detention, that kind of thing, and speak about it, whether you write an angry letter to your MP or whether you just talk to your friends when they don't seem to be right about things, because these things keep getting worse because the government thinks nobody cares about migrants, that they're kind of so othered that, you know, things are bad if you're a victim of domestic violence, things are bad if you're disabled, things are bad if you're a victim of hate crime, but they're worse if you're a migrant. Like, we tried to report a fraud for one of our migrants and they said, well, we'll probably just arrest her though because she's an overstayer. And she's like a single mother of a victim of FGM trafficking, and the police are like, where is she? We'll take her away. And I was like, that's the reason it's me reporting this and not her. And they didn't do anything about the fraud. They wouldn't give us a crime reference number. But so it's that, these are things that you can speak out about those things yourself. Then if you want to do more, there's the mentoring program that Roy's part of, where, so like that young Afghan boy's got no one standing at his side, you can be someone standing at his side, or people who just don't have anyone to talk to, are very isolated, or people who need help with things. I mean, you're a photographer and your mentee's a photographer, so you're doing a photography project. It's so cool. And that project's just around the corner. Some people who've got a spare room in their house are hosting refugees. When this started, I thought it was going to be the worst system in the world, and they seem to me fraught with safeguarding issues, having a refugee in your spare room, but actually the system's been brilliant, and there are so many people who we just don't know what we'd do with them if a host hadn't offered to take them. Particularly, there's at the moment, there's two young gay men I'm working with, and I'm like, asylum support's going to be really bad for them, because you share a room and you don't know who with or where they're from or how homophobic they are. Out of London, these two young men, one of them's got medical treatment he needs to have in London, one of them's a victim of torture, who again is only friends with people in London. Like, they really need to stay here, and they won't with asylum support. So refugee hosting is really good. We got one family with a kid who was like, they said she'd have to go back to social services, and she'd been in this host, and she was like, no, but I have a bed here, don't send me back. Because they'd been in this hideous travel lodge where she had to share a bed with her dad when she's 8. And she had this like lovely room in this nice house in Kew. the other thing that you could volunteer somewhere. The places I work with are mostly run with volunteers. So however much, whether it's just reading about it or whether it's like kind of coming and doing something, you're very welcome. But money donated today will go towards destitution grants. So that family on their £60 a week will help their boy get to school, that kind of thing. And we're trying to make it so he can go to the school that he worked to get into, because it's so wretched otherwise. I don't even know if he'll like the school, but it's just this idea that people are denied their dreams because of their birth status is so repugnant to me. And, you know, you're looking at this boy and saying, what are you doing for the 6 weeks summer holiday? And him being like, oh, nothing. And me being like, no, but I always went on like summer camps, and, you know, why isn't he being able to do those things? And he's so hardworking. So migrants, they're just people. There's people who are nice, people who are annoying, people who are kind, people who are not kind. But it's the sort of hardships that might affect me are much worse if you're without immigration status.
Thank you. And please, our visitors, you are our guests today. Don't feel you've got to give to our collection. You live in a land that has a few problems of its own, I am aware. But as always, we just give as we're able, no more. We build on foundations we did not lay. We warm ourselves at fires we did not light. We sit in the shade of trees we did not plant, and we drink from wells we did not dig. Each of us is blessed with gifts from those who were here before us and have gifts to pass on to others in our turn. So in the week ahead, let us be intentional in our living, in the choices we make and the paths we take. And may our intention be to share the harvest of life more fairly with all those we meet along the way. Amen. Go well, blessed be.